Hi. I'm Ellen. And I haven't had a heterosexual thought in 8 days.
I told her this wasn't something to joke about, you know.
And you are?
Oh, heartbroken, confused, sad.
I think she meant your name.
You think I act strange when you talk to me? 'Cause I don't hear you. Yeah. I'm gonna make you wonder.
Hello and welcome to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we look at the LGBT-themed episodes of classic sitcoms, which is to say the very special episodes that also happen to be the very queer episodes. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin.
And in case that intro didn't tip you off, today we are talking about Ellen. The show,
finally.
The show, but not the Ellen show that's on now where she dances a lot, the other Ellen that was on in the 90s.
Yeah, and I didn't remember that in the later seasons, like, she's had different musicians performing her theme song. It was sort of like a harbinger of things to come, of her love of music.
Oh, I actually didn't really think about that. You're right. Yeah, she's like doing a lot of musical experimentation and bringing famous people out to do her thing. I know they complicated the opening with the theme song to try to find like who actually did the theme song. And it's this Scottish band called Texas that did the closing theme to Picture Perfect. I know you know Picture Perfect.
Of course I do.
Yeah. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, you can say what you want, but it won't change my mind.
Yeah, you can say.
That song. That's them. That's who sings. That's who things. I forgot how to talk. So I guess the podcast is over.
Speaking of forgetting how to talk, season 3.
Hi. Yeah, this is the third season. We're starting a third season that is going to get in a good number of episodes before end of the year and then have some more on the other side.
The year's ending?
Yeah. Pretty quickly, actually.
Oh, goodbye, 2017.
Yeah. Please don't send us back to 2018 again. I don't want to go through that again. It's very stressful. Yeah, since we started the show, people have been wanting to hear us talk about Ellen, and kind of like with Will and Grace, I'm like, I don't really know what to do because they wanted us to do the puppy episode, which is the one where she comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing Ellen comes out to her parents.
What a twist.
I know. It's the episode that airs exactly after the puppy episode, which at least I felt was like one of the most analyzed and talked about TV episodes ever. And I did not really think I had that much to add to that conversation.
No.
No, you agree?
She comes out.
Yeah, she comes out. And there's famous people there.
Yeah.
Important, but this was a better one, I thought, just because the whole idea of coming out is something that you don't just do once. You have to do constantly. And
unless you're famous. And you just do it all in one swath.
You get a magazine cover, like Time Magazine, where you're like, yep.
I'm a gay. Drew, you said the coming out episode of Ellen was important. Why?
Because, like, the real coming out episode or the one we're talking about?
The real coming out episode.
Because it was the first time we had an openly gay person playing an openly gay character on a major network TV series.
John Lovett, and I think on Love It or Leave It this week or last week or whenever this comes out, actually made a good point about Ellen coming out in that it was an important moment of TV for people who couldn't talk about why it was important to them. Like for a lot of like gay kids and gay teenagers who were really excited about it, they couldn't like go to school and say, oh my God, Ellen came out. That's so important to me because we're all still in the closet. And so it's something that like we get to talk about later in life. And it was important to people who were already out, obviously. Did you cry when Ellen got her Medal of Freedom from Barack Obama? I wept.
I did not. I have a different relationship with Ellen DeGeneres than you do.
I mean, you can have a different relationship and still value her importance, you monster.
Well, I mean, I'm going to get into my feelings toward Ellen, which don't affect her work. I think her work is important, but she as a person, I have, I don't have the attitudes that a lot of gay people have towards her, certainly. And not a lot of Midwestern moms who watch her show every day. She's the dancing lady. She dances. Anyway, I guess, yeah, what is your experience with Ellen the show and also like the big coming out episode?
I liked and watched Ellen the show. I liked her as an actress. I liked the show in all of its forms. And I think it was early in the stream of 90s sitcoms that kept reinventing themselves, like between seasons. Like, I feel like Ellen reinvented itself before, like, The Single Guy reinvented itself, and
Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was about the 90s where everyone's like, this show really is about nothing. So, like, let's just try other things it's maybe about to try and find an audience.
I think they were all trying to figure out how to be friends.
Right.
Which is why at one point the show had a 6-member cast, 3 men, 3 women.
Yeah. Ellen was never my favorite show. I actually did enjoy the earlier seasons, maybe more. And the coming out happened in 4th season. Mm-hmm. But I feel like at the time it felt like she was well into the run of the show. Like, I assumed it was like a season 5 or 6 thing. Especially because people comment that, like, oh, she only came out to save her show or whatever.
Yeah, I guess I've heard that argument before. Based on what I looked into, that's not true.
No, it is not.
But, and also it did not save the show. But the show was doing, the show was not doing badly in the 3rd season.
No.
The coming out episode was the biggest rated, but that was like a TV event. And this one actually got pretty good ratings too.
Good. That's
what we're talking about.
I think what was interesting or weird to me when the coming out episode happened was that, I don't know, it felt like, and this is what a lot of coming out stories in the 90s felt like to me, is like, people just confirming rumors. Like, everyone knew Ellen was gay. But did everyone know Ellen was gay? Did people in, like, I don't know, middle of America know? And so it was just interesting when, you know, it went from being the butt of the joke, like, oh, Ellen's a lesbian, to being a stated fact. And, you know, something that was attempted to be empowering for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, same thing with that episode of Married with Children we did, where Marcy has a gay cousin,
mm-hmm.
because for so long, like, the joke was Amanda Bierce is a lesbian, and to her, have her have an episode where it was like her saying, yes, basically, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Here's me playing a lesbian. And this is actually a through line in the episode we're going to talk about how joking about something and poking fun at something can be a form of understanding and empowerment.
Totally.
And so I think in that way, I know a lot of people got tired of the lesbian jokes, mm-hmm. in the show after she came out. But, you know, that is sort of, it may seem stale now, but it was important at the time to be able to tell stale jokes about being gay.
And just talk about it a lot, because, like, I actually got tired of the coded lesbian jokes leading up to her coming out. Like, the whole running joke of season 4 is that the titles aren't ready. Like, the opening credits aren't ready. And there's one where it's one of the other cast members is facing the camera. And they're like, Ellen, the show's starting. Like, are you going to come out or not? And she's like, I'm not ready yet. And you're just like, okay, we know what you're doing. So maybe, like, the most oblivious people living under a rock didn't know Ellen was gay at that point. But those got old. And I feel like some of the criticism that she talked about the lesbian stuff too much is kind of unfair, but we can talk to that when we get to what happened after this season.
Did you know that Ellen was originally cast in Speed in the role that Sandra Bullock eventually played?
You were lying.
That is a true fact, unless I'm misremembering it, but it would have been a very different movie, which is why she was replaced.
Maybe if Sandra Bullock had been in Mr. Wrong, it would have been a hit.
Maybe.
Probably not. Probably not a hit. So my relationship with Ellen is weird. I admit that who she is and what she's done is important, but historically my family does not like Ellen for non-homophobic reasons, I should add. My mom would not watch the show because she found Ellen to be very annoying, which she is. Ellen Morgan, the character, because she has a nervous energy that kind of makes me uncomfortable to watch her, less so in this episode because she's a lot calmer. And that might have been...
Well, she has an agenda in this episode.
Right. And she doesn't have quite as much reason to be so fidgety. I guess she kind of does. But, like, I didn't get that horrible nervous energy here. My grandma really didn't like Ellen. And I was like, oh, no, why? And it was just because, like, she's always dancing. It's annoying. I was like, that's fair, grandma. That's a good reason to dislike Ellen. I particularly don't like Ellen because...
Did you grow up in the Flashdance town?
Mm-hmm.
Not Flash. Did you grow up in the Footloose town?
No, I grew up in the Flashdance, and you were right the first
time.
You
will edit out the...
No, I grew up... Jennifer Beals was my babysitter. I don't like Ellen because she did something that was combative and nasty to a newspaper I worked for. And when she... Like, I don't really... I mean, I didn't talk to the people who work at the paper about this. So I'll just say in broad strokes that it was unnecessary and mean. And it confirmed a lot of rumors I had heard before I even moved to Los Angeles that Ellen was maybe not as nice as her on-screen personality indicated. I actually kind of think that's okay. Like, Johnny Carson was a huge jerk off camera. So I guess like the female version of Johnny Carson should also be allowed to be a huge jerk off camera. It's like, if we let him do it, we should allow her to do it too. She doesn't have to be nice just because her on-screen persona is Mrs. Nice Lady, but she's combative and what's the word? You like to sue people? What is it?
Litigious.
Litigious. Litigious is the word. Thank you. Conversely, I will also say that one time I was standing outside a food truck and Jane Lynch, who is also a tall, blonde, successful, lesbian, comedian, funny lady, was there and she was literally just like narrating the menu to herself and be like, waffle fries, do I want those? And like engage. She was basically crowdsourcing her meal options with anyone who was standing right by there. I'm like, I like her better.
Ellen, if you would like to hire me and treat me like shit, I am open to it.
She can throw coffee in your eyes or something.
That's fine.
I made that up. I've never heard that she did that. I do wonder, so like we work in an industry, and I think most people in Los Angeles would be aware of some perceptions certain people have of this particular person. And I wonder if people living in like Nebraska are even aware that there's this like other dimension to her personality. I don't know.
And should it matter?
It shouldn't matter. I mean, I'm talking about, so clearly I think it does matter. I feel like it's weird to hold. I feel like there's more of an expectation that a woman should, a female celebrity should be nicer than a male celebrity because women in general are expected to be nicer. So in one way, it's, if she doesn't give a fuck, she doesn't have to give a fuck. Just go be a rich lady. But I do suspect that maybe like, okay, remember like a few months ago when Kevin Hart went on her show to talk about how he thought it was unfair that people accused him of being homophobic?
Yeah, that wasn't a good look.
No. Yeah, that look for her was wealthy lady and person who was maybe also scared of being accused of going, saying the wrong thing and getting in trouble. And she was speaking as like a comedian who's wants to make sure that she doesn't fall out of favor. So that was a weird look, but we're going to focus on the good parts of Ellen, which was the show. When the show was on, I had no objection to her and she did do some really important stuff. As you mentioned, Ellen reinvented itself several times over the run of the show. 5 seasons and 109 episodes on ABC from March 29th, 1994, and then ending about a year after the puppy episode on July 22nd, 1998, which means that they burned off those episodes in the summer. The first stage is gender flip Seinfeld because it was a product of the whole every comedian gets a sitcom era. So basically she's the Jerry and she has 2 female friends and then Ari Gross is the Elaine, essentially. And it was called These Friends of Mine, which even Ellen herself said in an interview that title sucked. They switched it to Ellen. That's a terrible title. But then after they dropped the friends from the title, they actually became friends. So it's Ellen, Ari Gross, and then Julie Fisher plays Paige, who's like the spunky friend. She's great, by the way. I like her. Do most people know she's Carrie Fisher's half-sister?
I would think so.
All right. And then Jeremy Piven playing Spence.
What season did he come in? 2 or 3?
I think the 3rd season. I believe the 3rd season. I could be wrong. Kind of weird that him and Ari Gross overlap for a second because there's not that much to differentiate them other than Ari Gross is kind of a quasi-love interest for Ellen and Spence is her cousin and therefore they can't be love interests for each other because that would be a weird season. But it's also weird to see Jeremy Piven on screen and be like, I'm not actively like offended by you. Like you're not scaring me like you did on Entourage.
There was an episode where he's in the bathtub and it gave me feelings.
Oh. I was wondering what his body looked like because you can't, but like in this episode, you can't tell because all of his shirts are gigantic. It was that like fake vintage button down thing and everything's just hanging off him. You don't get a really good idea for what his body looks like. And then the cast is rounded out by Clea Lewis, who plays Audrey, who I love because she has like a weird Carol Kane energy.
Carol Kane by way of Phoebe.
Yeah, that's perfect. Carol Kane actually plays her mom. I think in the season that we're talking about right now. And she is perky, but I feel her perkiness is masking a deep inner sadness.
I feel like she was introduced to the show as like a love interest for Ari.
She might have been in the... She actually appears in the 1st season,
yeah.
And which means she outlasted everyone else on the show. And she's dour and depressing. And then they bring her back and she has divorced her husband and has turned into a new person and she's pink and perky, but I think she has a deep inner sadness still. I think she's funny. I enjoy her. And then last one is Joe, the barista, played by David Anthony Higgins, who's just a rude guy who serves no purpose, but they just make him part of the group for no reason, basically.
The only line I remember from any episode of Ellen is him calling someone Baldy Beardo.
Did that stick with you?
Yes, and now I am Baldy Beardo.
How do you feel about being Baldy Beardo?
It's fine.
It's an active look now. It's like, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ari Gross got kicked off the show halfway through third season, and then Ellen comes out and becomes the lesbian show, where most of the plot lines are about Ellen's romantic life or gay culture or something. And people on both sides objected to it. People who didn't like that she came out thought it spoiled the show. And people like Chaz Bono, who appears in this episode, later would say that he thought the show skewed too lesbian-y, which is kind of a shitty thing to say, because I feel like if she'd gone the other way, people would have just criticized her for like coming out and then not doing enough with it. I don't really see how they could have, like, maybe there's a perfect line they could have treaded, but like most people are not going to be happy with
There's no perfect line.
No. She does get in a relationship with Lisa Dar, who I like, and at least they gave her like a long-term love interest that like seemed like she worked with her. So good for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the hour-long special that was Ellen, A Hollywood Tribute?
No.
So it airs almost towards the end of the last season of the show, and it's a fake mockumentary about the history of Ellen that kind of, the conceit is that like it has existed for decades. It goes back to the black and white era.
Oh, yeah.
And it's actually kind of well done. They get a lot of celebrities to like talk about their experiences with like decade-spanning phenomenon that is Ellen. And they talk about the coming out episode, and they talk about the scene where like she's with Laura Dern in the airport, and she says, the exact line is, I'm 35 years old and I'm afraid to say the word. I'm gay. And then they cut back to her and she's like, yeah, that was a really important thing to do on TV because it never happened before that we had a woman who was the lead on a major network sitcom who revealed her actual age. And then like off camera, you hear like someone asked like, what about the gay thing? And she's like, oh, the gay thing? That's just the network made it a big deal. They're gay crazy there. And I think they already knew they were getting canceled at that point. And that is actually fairly cutting commentary coming from someone who had a brand as being like, nice, funny, like nervous lady. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fucking good.
It's a good joke.
Yeah. But we are not there. This episode is 1 week after the puppy episode. 2 weeks after the Yep, I'm Gay cover of Time magazine, Ellen and Anne Heche are still a couple. And we're about to learn so many fascinating things about Anne Heche.
Wait, was Ellen 35 when she came out, or is her character 35?
I don't know. I feel like she was probably older than 30. I mean, okay. I can look it up if you want.
I just want to know if I should feel bad about my age and my status. Like when I discovered yesterday that Kelsey Grammer was 29 when he started playing the role of Fraser Crane, and I had like a minor stroke.
She was born in 1958, so that means that she was older than 35 when that episode recorded, but not that much. And I mean, you're ahead of Ellen Morgan, the character, because she was 35 and just realizing that, oh, fucking guy. All right. And just,
yeah, but she owned a bookstore.
She didn't own the bookstore. She quickly
just sold it.
Yeah. This episode titled Hello Mata, Hello Fada seems like a very dated reference that they could have taken another pass on, but whatever, was watched by 18 million viewers, which is more than watched every other episode that season, except for the puppy episode. Puppy episode was 36 million viewers, which is huge.
I know I sent you the ratings for this year's fall premieres, and like the highest rated show, Grey's Anatomy, got like 1.8. Like, everything's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
No one watches anything anymore.
Because we're not forced to.
All right. Too much choice.
Yeah, no, I'm happy about it. This one is written by Jan Nash. It is her first ever writing credit, though she'd go on to executive produce both Rizzoli and Isles and currently Black Lightning. Based on what I found online, it's possible she was married to a woman. So if that is the case, go Jan. It was directed by Gil Junger, who directed a ton of episodes in the fourth and fifth season of the show, including the puppy episode, for which he was nominated for an Emmy. And he also directed 10 Things I Hate About You. I know. I think he's a relative of Paul Junger Witt, who was married to Susan Harris, and they were co-executive producers of Golden Girls. But it's possible they are both named Junger and were sitcom veterans. I don't know. That's all the background I have for this. Is there anything else you need to unpack before we get into this?
No.
So I'll remind people that in the puppy episode, Ellen comes out at the airport and then she tells her friends, and that's basically the end of the episode. So this takes place like the day after, where she is newly gay and enjoying herself. And the opening scene is the bookstore where the gang is hanging out. Not like Central Perk at all, because it's a different place. They just all like coffee, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's funny that she owned a bookstore because people in Los Angeles don't read.
But they buy a lot of books. I have a lot of books.
You're the exception. You're the only one. You're keeping the book industry alive.
Oh, well. So, we actually open on Joe taking a bite of a biscuit and spitting it back into the biscuit container.
Because he's awful.
Yeah. I don't have a reach around for that. It's just gross.
I mean, biscotti is really gross. I get it, but you should know not to eat it. Ellen is explaining to the gang her plan for coming out to her parents.
We walk in, we sit down. Ashang, the flamboyant waiter that's been waiting on us for years, will come over, take our drink orders. My dad's going to order a Tsing Tao, and my mom's going to order a white wine spritzer, and then I'm going to look them right in the eye. I'm going to say, Mom, Dad, Ashang's gay. And then get the dialogue going.
People are not supportive of this plan, necessarily, and Paige is interestingly not supportive of it because she compares it to trying on shoes.
Ellen, don't you think that it's maybe too soon? I mean, you know when you go shopping for shoes, you go in the store, you try them on, you kind of walk around in them for a little while, make sure they really fit.
Uh-huh. Well, I bought the shoes. They fit fine. I've thrown out the box. I've got it all planned out.
The interesting thing about that plot is that I think they resolved this in the last episode of the season. It takes her a while to be okay with it. She's the last one to feel like she's okay with Ellen being a lesbian, which is sort of surprising because there's nothing about her that's conservative at all, but is not an unrealistic thing to have happen when sometimes a very well-meaning close friend has a hard time with someone coming out.
Yeah, there's not really a B plot to this episode, but it would be Paige. Like, she gets a moment in a scene later where she's as sick of everyone paying attention to Ellen.
Which almost seems like meta commentary, but like they couldn't have known that because they hadn't got that far down the line yet. But it is very on point for that.
Yeah.
Julie Fisher's a homophobe. That is established. Is there anything else in the opening scene?
I mean, Julie Fisher is not a homophobe.
That's
not established.
This is a documentary. That's why it's called Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All I have written about this scene otherwise is that Jeremy Piven, his shirts are so big.
Yeah. It's the 90s.
I'm glad we got past that. They're basically dressing him like Chandler.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Joan Jett and the Black Arts play the opening theme song, and then we're in the Chinese restaurant right away. I love this scene so much. I think this is a great scene of TV. This makes me very happy.
Oh, it is. It's perfect. It has misunderstanding. It has plans going awry.
It has actual drama, and then the drama segue into jokes perfectly the way a sitcom should do. And I have to say, the scene is just Ellen sitting at the table with her parents, who are also season one holdovers, and I think they're very good in their roles, and they are perfectly cast as Ellen's parents. Like, they actually look like they could be her mother and father, and separately, they have Ellen's mannerisms. Like, a lot of the nervousness is in the mom, and a lot of, like, the, like, dopiness is in the dad. Like, it just makes perfect sense. They are played by Stephen Gilborn is the dad, and the mom is Alice Herson. They are sitcom veterans who have been in almost everything. The dad actually passed away. The mom is still with us.
Oh, but yay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this scene's great. It was one of the first times I was tempted to just be like, just cut in the entire scene. And it's interesting because every dramatic beat is what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
And all the jokes they make from those dramatic beats are pretty much what you'd expect, but it's done so flawlessly that it doesn't come off as cliche.
No.
Like, by today's standards, yeah, sure, maybe you could say, but it's just, but it is also the nervous energy to the scene and to the performances are very uniquely Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
So it never feels like perfunctory. It feels like very organic to the show.
Right. Yes, everyone's reaction seems completely understandable. I understand their motivations. And yeah, it's very Ellen in that, like, I don't think this scene could exist on really any other show. Like, you have to have this actress be the lead of it. Yeah, I didn't think it was cliched at all. And having mixed feelings about Ellen as an entity, going back and watching this, I was like, I hope it doesn't suck. And I was surprised how much I like the entire episode, but this scene in particular, fuck, it's so good.
Yeah, and it doesn't drag, but it also doesn't feel rushed, like, they leave room for the jokes. They leave room for the emotional reactions. And where it needs to slow down for, like, the most earnest beats, it does so.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, most of my notes from this episode were just, like, writing down lines from this scene that were good.
Yeah. We could have just played the whole scene, but we will interrupt it because that's our job. Before Ellen gets there, the mom and dad are thinking that she's just been glowing lately and she probably has some good news, and they think that she's finally found Mr. Right, which I assume has to be a reference to Mr. Wrong, because Ellen apparently had a really good sense of humor about how it was like a catastrophe. And it is weird to think of, that came out like the February before the scene was taking place. So it's weird to think of her career going from like Ellen DeGeneres, new rom-com queen, to like, well, she's a lesbian now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they were that self-aware. I don't think that joke was, like, poking fun at the movie. I think the mom was just very focused on her daughter finding Mr. Right.
Well, it wasn't a laugh beat, but I feel like if Ellen had been very sensitive about that being a box office bomb, that is something they would have edited out of the scene. So it had to at least occur to her. But in the first scene before the credits, Ellen says that, like, I know exactly how this is going to happen. She predicts everything, and she down to what her parents are going to drink, a Tsingtao and a white wine spritzer. So when she arrives and says hi, and the waiter shows up, who is not Sean, she tries to order that. And they're like, no, actually, that's not what we're going to order, which is a little joke, but a nice way of foreshadowing. It's like, you think you know these people very well, but you actually can't predict exactly how they're going to react.
Hey, Sean, I'm late.
Hi.
Hey.
Ah, Mr. Morgan, out for an evening with your two daughters?
Stan, I know it's coming every time and it still makes me laugh.
Wait, where's Sean?
Out on vacation.
Vacation? Well, he's a waiter. He can't afford to go far. Where'd he go? Is he? But, you know, we'll just order. We'll just order drinks. Dad's going to have the Tsingtao, and my mom's going to have the white wine spritzer.
Honey, I'm just going to have a glass of water.
Yeah, and I'll have the iced tea. You know, honey, I'm getting my new driver's license tomorrow, and I don't want my eyes to look puffy.
I'll have a white wine spritzer. Someone should drink.
It's also just a good dramatic thing of, like, putting Ellen off her sure footing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right away, her plans go out the window.
No one really wants to watch self-confident Ellen. We want to see her, like, put off track. The waiter, who is not Sean, is played by James Hong, who is probably easily has the best filmography of anyone in this episode. His appearances include Chinatown, Airplane, and Big Trouble in Little China, where he plays the bad guy.
Yep. Yeah. He lived above my friend for a bit.
In L.A.?
Or was his neighbor, yeah.
Still alive, by the way. Still acting at 90. This is according to his official website, but I'm not going to argue with it. He says that he's one of the most prolific actors ever. I'm like, he probably is. He has almost 400 credits because he's been working his entire life.
Yeah, and if you've seen Big Trouble in Little China, you know that he's not going to die.
Yeah.
It's because he's going to live to be very, very old.
This is a documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Kim Cattrall was half Chinese in that movie?
I think so. Okay. But the whole thing is that it's remarkable that she has green eyes, mm-hmm. but it's not remarkable if a woman has green eyes and she's Caucasian, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Ellen tries to gauge her parents' opinion of gay people.
What do you think about gay people?
In the military?
Yeah, in the military.
What branch?
Doesn't matter, Army, Navy, Air Force.
No, honey, you have to be specific. I mean, we're talking apples and oranges here.
You know, honey, if this dinner was to talk about current events, I didn't get a chance to read the paper this morning.
And then they talk about Tootsie.
Mm-hmm.
He did not understand Tootsie at all.
No.
I just want to know, I mean, what do you think of gay people?
Well, I loved Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie.
No, Harold. He wasn't gay. He just dressed like a woman to get acting work.
Really?
Yeah.
God, where was I? But I tell you, when he took that makeup off, I really missed Dorothy. Hey, do you know who looks good in a dress? Nathan Lane. Gene Hackman.
Defends Nathan Lane that he looks good in a dress. Gene Hackman, no. And it took me a second. I'm like, oh,
Birdcage.
Right. Gene Hackman was in Birdcage. Yeah. And then I re-remembered Calista Flockhart is also in the Birdcage.
Yep, playing a 16-year-old or something like that.
No, she's engaged. She's like, she's young. Right. She's going to marry the son. Who's
18, I guess.
Dan Futterman?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with him?
Yes, I am. Of course I am. I was a gay in the 90s. I'm very familiar with Dan Futterman. And yes, I know he's a prolific, successful screenwriter now.
I did not know that. This was news to me. He
has too much.
He does have too much. He wrote Foxcatcher, that creepy Steve Carell movie mm-hmm. that no one wanted to see, but got nominated for stuff. And then Capote, which was really good. So
good for him. Good for this handsome man.
Mm-hmm. And he got to, like, wear ladies' clothes with Gene Hackman and Diane Wiest and Calista Flockhart.
He didn't dress in drag at the end.
Is it just Gene Hackman's family that has to, like, dance out of there?
Calista Flockhart, and I think she dresses up a bit and...
They're all supposed to look like drag queens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I think Dan Futterman maybe put on, like, a top hat or something.
Is Christine Baranski also in that scene or no?
I believe she is also in that scene.
Why does she come back at the end? Like what? Like
because there was a mix-up, and when they told her not to come, she then called, and Dan Futterman's character says, "No, that was a mistake. Please do come because
to me, like my girlfriend's family."
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, because they thought that he knew it would piss off Nathan Lane's character. Anyway, that movie's perfect. I love that movie.
This has been Drew and Glenn recapping another thing very briefly. Also, I'm sorry if we just spoiled the Birdcage for you. You probably should have seen it by now.
Yeah. I didn't really spoil it. There's, it all works out in this comedy.
There are people, yourself included, be like, I didn't need to know the ending. I'm sad I know the ending.
Fine. Yeah, Gene Hackman dressed it up in drag. Great.
Yeah, that's the surprise ending of the movie. She tries to ask her parents what they would do if Sean were gay.
Ellen didn't get us here to talk about men in drag, did you, dear?
No, but I do want to just find out what you think about gay people. I mean, somebody here has got to be gay. Just... For the sake of argument, let's just say it's me. Okay, let's try something else. Let's say Sean is your child. What do you think of that?
Well, I wouldn't have named him a Sean.
Yeah, but he's your child, so.
Well, no, he's 50 years old. I would have had to have him when I was 10.
Right, but he's your child and he's gay. What would you think if your child was gay?
Our child is not gay.
Yes, she is.
It was a very good moment, I thought.
Because they let it sit there for a second, and they don't turn it into a laugh, and they let the parents seem, like, not appalled necessarily, but very surprised by this information. But then the waiter comes in.
What?
I'm gay.
Oh, here's our
idiot. Oh, hi there. Well, there we go.
You ready to order?
Oh, well, yes, you just try and stop us. I think, for starters, we will have that Jingdao and the white wine spritz.
And we'll have the moshu pork and some steamed vegetables and two orders of pot stickers.
Oh, okay? I love those pot stickers. Ellie, is that going to be enough vegetables for you?
That's fine.
Yeah, and rice. Lots and lots of rice.
Ah, Mr. Morgan, 你真的终于吃饭, huh? You love that rice?
Oh, my God.
Oh, you forgot the wonton soup tonight.
I did forget, Lois.
Yes.
Ellie.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we'll have soup.
Yes,
soup's all around.
Please.
Well, let's see. Where were we? I was late. Michonne's on vacation. Tootsie. Gene Hackman. Oh, that's right. I'm gay.
It's very well acted by everyone, especially the dad. But it is also... It's not even that much of a reach around, but it's like how parents always want to put a good face out for the world, even if inside they're falling apart and dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that Mary Tyler Moore movie.
Falling apart and dying.
Ordinary people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. That's everyone's parents.
Yeah. Well, don't make a scene.
I mean, exactly.
They go into like the usual steps of coming out in the 90s. Like, is it anything we did?
Honey, this is nonsense. I mean... You know, you just sold the bookstore and you're moving into a new house and it's just a very stressful time for you.
No, it's not about stress.
Honey, you know, just because you haven't found the right man doesn't mean you're gay. I mean, you're just very choosy and there's nothing wrong with being choosy.
I'm not attracted to any men.
No, that's too choosy.
Well, how long have you known?
I don't know.
Well, you weren't gay yesterday.
Actually, yes, I was.
Oh, my God. It's the separation. It is. It's the separation, isn't it?
No, it was not the separation.
Did I push you too hard to wear dresses?
Yes. Yes, but that's not why I'm gay.
Was I too macho? I mean, it's the damn Coast Guard in me.
I don't understand. You've always liked boys.
I still do like boys. I just don't like them the way other women like
them. Well, honey, then if you still like men, don't give up so easily. Just, you know, you should talk to someone.
I have talked to someone.
Well, maybe you should talk to somebody else.
One of the funnier lines to me was when Ellen says...
Well, this just, you know, it isn't what we expected at dinner tonight.
I know it's not. I know. But please understand that for the first time, I am... really, really happy.
Oh. So now you're saying you had a lousy childhood. Your brother Stevie had exactly the same childhood and he turned out perfectly normal.
I am normal, Dad.
I'm sorry, Ellie. I don't know what I'm saying.
You know, you always wanted me to be open and honest with you.
Oh, no, honey, that's what you wanted. Always very happy keeping our feelings bottled up.
So I always thought the mom being like kind of a wimp, like she's like nice and quiet, but like she has an edge to her. And like that is also something I think a lot of people's moms would think and not say.
Yes.
I think that's what my parents basically are. But like, I'm glad they gave her that line. That's a really funny line. She delivers it perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And come on, I mean, Gen Xer, stop talking about your fucking feelings.
Exactly. And I mean, ugh, yeah, not to be all current eventsy, but like there is a school of thought that like not sharing your feelings is a form of strength. Whereas, you know, later generations will say like, no, being open and honest is strong and talking this out is good.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, blah, blah.
I agree. She said, I thought you already knew.
And I guess somehow I thought that maybe you already knew.
Already knew? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right, Ellie. Yeah, yeah, we have known all along. And they were just pretending here to feel shocked and upset and disappointed.
They have not been watching the show. They haven't seen all the coded clues. He says, are you seeing anyone? It's like, no. He's like, can you even be gay by yourself? Which is weirdly something that does get asked a lot. I can't actually wrap my head around how a straight person would think that.
Which then, of course, gets into school of thought. Like, well, no kids should have sexual orientation or gender before puberty.
I mean, it would be easier for the kids that end up not, like, going with the flow, I guess.
As a child, I got around that by playing the dog whenever kids wanted to play house.
Oh, that was smart of you. Mm-hmm. Also, the dog would have a lot of more fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like the goose in the goose game. I just got to cause chaos.
We're so of the moment, Goose Game. Also, Goose Game sounds like a double entendre for something, but I guess it's not. Do people know that verb still?
Goosing?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because I think only like creepy old straight men do that.
Okay, do we have that verb? Because a goose will run up to you and poke you in the butt?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So the dad explodes and he's like,
well, what does that mean? I mean, can you be gay by yourself?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'm gay. I'm sorry, Ellen. Does that shock you? I thought you knew all along.
Don't worry, dear. He's not really gay.
End of scene. It's really good.
Commercial break. Should we also take a commercial break?
That's a great idea, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, remember when we got our tarot cards read?
I thought we were playing Pokemon.
What card were you most surprised to get?
Two of Thurman. You?
The dead roommate.
What do you think that means?
Who can say? I bring it up because people might be interested to know that tarot readings are just one of the many offerings at A Love Bazaar, LA's best queer art space cum magic shop. Susie May is the shop's resident witch, and I gotta say, never having had a professional card reading before, it was a really interesting experience.
So if you're in Atwater and you want to look at gay art and maybe glimpse your dark, dark future, stop by Love Bazaar, ask for Susie about card readings, crystal consultations, and other stuff predisposed by an adolescent love of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
A Love Bazaar is located at 3042 Glendale Boulevard, right off Hyperion Bridge. It's the pink and purple store with the flowers on it.
And if you want to know about upcoming shows, check out the store's Instagram, at A Love Bazaar Store.
A Love Bazaar. Find yourself here.
Wednesday's Pop, when an all-new Drew kicks off the night at 8, 7 Central. Drew, Mimi battle for the same promotion. May the best man win.
Employees of this store and I are cut from the same cloth.
How much of it did they get?
Then, on an all-new Grace, share her happiest day, graduation.
20 years and you made it.
Then, TV Guide says, it's hilarious. A triumph. 9 out of 10. Ellen, the episode, a special hour Wednesday at 9, 8 Central on ABC.
Hey, Drew, are people still supporting us on Patreon?
Oh, they sure are, Glenn. Only one person canceled their pledge. And by the way, you know we can see when you cancel, right? It's not like unfollowing on Twitter. You log into Patreon and it will tell you if someone previously contributing money no longer is. I see you. I know what you did.
I actually didn't need to know that. Do we have any new contributors?
We sure do. And because we greatly appreciate the support, we thank anyone by name who pledges $3 a month or more. And then we assign them a random compliment from the box of compliments, which we will do now. Glenn, if you're ready.
I am.
The first, the given name is Salacious Grimlock.
Irreprehensible. You wrote these.
Irreprehensible.
It means not reprehensible.
I don't remember writing that one. Okay. Well, sorry, Salacious Grimlock. That's what you got. Joe Roggenbeck.
Certified ringworm free. We are not.
I don't remember.
Well, we are not doctors. I don't know that we can actually certify that.
Did I write these drunk? I wonder. Okay. Aaron Hardy.
Good at jigsaw puzzles, but not stuck up about it.
That sounds like me. That sounds normal.
No, it sounds like Aaron Hardy.
That's true. That's true. That sounds like something I wrote. That makes sense. Okay. Matt, I'm sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong. Filestucker?
Yeah, you nailed it. I know Matt. Oh. He is a very talented sculptor of pots and such.
Oh.
You should check out Peepo Pots.
Peepo Pots. Mm-hmm. Wait, how do you spell that?
I don't know. There's a P and a couple vowels.
Okay.
Has never lost a lawsuit. I also don't know if that's true, but he does have a great love of Die Hard, which I appreciate.
Well, we say we randomly assign these. We're not saying they're necessarily accurate. We're just giving you compliments. It's up to you what you do with them. Okay. Gino, no last name.
Snappy dresser.
That's good. Timothy Burleson.
Good at growing turnips. And I like that you misspelled turnips and corrected yourself.
Did I?
Yes.
Okay, well. And finally, Philip Rivera.
Naturally smells like vanilla, which is actually one of the smells I can smell.
Have we ever talked about your lack of olfactory sensation?
No.
It heightened your other senses though, right?
No. Oh. I also have trouble hearing. So please don't call me on the phone.
Oh my.
Single fellas.
If you would like to support us, go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever or click on the link in the No, that's you. That's you. You say that. Okay. No, I say this. In addition to random compliments, people who donate even $1 a month get all forthcoming episodes a week early, which means those Patreon people know I was talking about why Ellen sucks a week before everybody else was.
If you would like to support us, I don't know why, go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever or click the link in the show notes.
Glenn spends his share of the money on slide whistles. Glenn, are we back?
I have no idea. You're the one recording this.
You can just say we're back.
We're back.
Yay! So it's the next day, and everyone's at the bookstore wondering how Ellen's conversation with her parents went, which reminded me that, like, oh, it's 1997. No one has phones. There is no text messaging. That close group of friends would know everything in 2019. You would immediately tell everyone and also post on Facebook about it. And yeah.
I also feel like in today's TV culture, we wouldn't need to have that sort of line of exposition coming back from commercial break where everyone is letting you know what just happened.
Right.
Or if you're just tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very 1997.
I've already mentioned my favorite part of this scene, which is
Paige
saying it's unfair that Ellen's getting all the attention for being gay.
Coming out to your parents is like a life-changing experience. It's probably the biggest thing that ever happened.
Excuse me. Hi. I'm sorry. But ever since Ellen decided she was gay, that is all we ever talk about. I have things going on in my life too, right?
Of course you do. Of course you do, honey. You know that. Go ahead. What's going on?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was in this huge meeting yesterday, and who walks in but William Hurt? And I'm sitting there, and I'm in this fabulous suit, and he turns right to me, and he says that he wants to...
Ellen! How'd it go last night?
Yeah, what happened?
And then she gets cut off by Audrey being like, Ellen! And I like her voice so much. It is a very irritating voice, but like she knows what she's doing, and Paige gets completely shut down, and no one asked what her story was. Ellen admits it did not go well. And it turns out Audrey's the only one who reads the
lesbian news.
And basically directs Ellen towards PFLAG, which I looked it up, still is a thing. I thought maybe that was something that like didn't exist in that form anymore. Parents and friends and family of lesbians and gays is completely still an organization in many countries, but also in the United States.
Good.
Also, it's weird watching this episode now. When they talk about the Gay and Lesbian Center, I'm like, oh, I know where I've been there. That's like an actual real building. I know where she went.
You should put a link to PFLAG in the show notes.
I should. And also the Gay and Lesbian Center.
Yeah.
So the next scene, Morgan family basement, where dejected Mr. Morgan is dealing with bad emotions the same way Reverend Lovejoy deals with bad emotions on The Simpsons, which is a toy train set. Which makes sense. That's a very straight patriarch thing to do, I guess.
They should upgrade to Lego trains.
You can write a letter to that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would be a lot more fun. Actually, like the idea of a Lego train set actually sounds like a lot of fun to me. Toy train sets seem like very limiting. I never really saw the appeal of them. Like you just put everything where it is and then it's there and the train goes in a circle.
Yeah.
Right. Like what else do you do?
I think it's a collector thing.
Oh.
I mean, you can also like paint them. You shop around for them. It's a collecting thing. It's a hobby. I don't know. A lot of hobbies don't make sense. Ships and bottles.
Doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, it really doesn't make sense. Dad is mopey and Ellen's like checking in on him and she's like, what's that? And he's like, well, that's your house. And I guess you don't need these anymore. And like takes the husband and child figurines out of her house. And she tries to give them to like the old lady who runs like
the diner or the flower shop or whatever.
Something like that. And she points out that just because he's gay doesn't mean she can't have a family.
It's your new house. And this is your family. And I guess we don't need them anymore.
Dad, just because I'm gay, it doesn't mean that I can't have a family. I mean, I don't need him. You know what? We could put him with Edna over here. She's been a widow, you know, 7 years now. She's ready to love again, don't you think?
I always get tripped up on that one because I'm like, when gay people come out, the idea of not having a family is something that looms large in the minds of their parents. I don't think it looms as largely when like a straight couple just chooses not to have kids. I don't really know.
Oh, but it does.
Does it?
Yes. Straight couples very much often get asked like, well, when are you having kids? When are you having kids? Mm-hmm. Why aren't you having kids? It's very selfish not to have kids.
Why is it selfish not to have kids?
We can get into the statistical reasons why people should have kids, but we're not going to.
I actually have some statistics coming up though.
Oh, good. Yeah. I do think that I would say we're like 5 years into a growing understanding that like our generation and millennials after us, where it is perfectly acceptable that we are not having kids, mainly because economically it makes zero sense.
Mm-hmm.
And also like as climate change and climate disaster becomes a greater understanding, like a lot of people are being like, well, maybe I will not bring a child into this world.
And also if people have fewer kids, those disasters will to a certain degree become sort of more navigable if there are just fewer people having to deal with the consequences of us blowing up the planet, basically.
Well, yeah. Also like, and especially in places like, I mean, climate change is going to be terrible for us, but it'll be worse for other places and they're going to need to go somewhere. And right. if our population is down, we will have
more room and more food theoretically to accommodate people that need to go somewhere.
Welcome to our climate change podcast.
That is something that often gets told, like, oh, you know, gay couples can still have kids, even though I know maybe of two that have children. And I want to look up how often do gay couples, same-sex couples, actually have children? According to a 2018 UCLA study, there were more than 700,000 cohabitating same-sex couples in the United States in 2016, including 346,000 male same-sex couples and 359 female same-sex couples. Of those, 114,000 were raising children. So of the 360 female same-sex couples, 86,000 have kids. Of the 350,000 male same-sex couples, only 28,000. Most gay couples actually don't have kids, which I guess makes sense. I was just wondering if maybe I work in this stupid town and like I don't know people that have time to have families. But like most gay couples do not do that. And of the ones who do, most of them are women. Men almost never do that.
My view of child rearing and having children is like, I don't know. I have a career and hobbies and I put a lot of passion into that. And I feel like I'd be robbing a child of my full attention and creative impulses.
And you might resent the kid too.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I literally have never felt the desire to have children, even though I was a child. I didn't like being around children. I don't understand children. And it is never even tick towards possible for me.
Another ex also said that if we had kids, he would want a closet in the house that we told him to never go into. And the only point of the closet would be to have like some sort of monster mannequin in it. So that if the kid ever opened the closet, they would learn a terrible, terrible lesson.
That's a great idea. Oh my God. If you're listening, people who have children, please do this.
Oh, closet space is too precious. Like, anyone who dates me knows there will not be a spare closet in the house.
Yes, we have Lego boxes in many places.
Only three places.
Three rooms. Three different rooms have Lego boxes.
Three different buildings have Lego boxes.
Uh-huh. Ellen confronts her dad.
You know what, Dad? Real life is not Morganville. You know, in real life, when a tree falls down, you can't just glue it back. And when your daughter tells you that she's gay, you can't just put her on the first train out of town. Because you know why, Dad? The train doesn't go out of town. The train just goes around and around in circles.
It is a well-written, deeply felt line where she's rebuking her dad about how his expectations are not realistic and what he's doing isn't fair. And then it segues again nicely into the joke about you can't just put your daughter on the train in the center out of a town because the track is circular. It just keeps coming back around, which is meaningful. It's very symbolic, but yeah. Like, yeah, it's really good. It made me very happy. Is there anything else in the train scene?
Ellie, I'm really trying here. I don't know. I mean, I just don't feel comfortable. I don't know any gay people.
Yes, you do. You know me.
Like, again, this episode just hits all the necessary beats that you would hope to have in an episode about coming out to your parents.
And I'm so glad we picked this one because it's been a while since I've seen the other one. But, like, her big coming out scene is unrealistic in the airport. And that's just it's made to be a TV moment rather than, like, an actual experience. And, like, the whole lesbian dream sequence is, like, very long. The stuff in this episode, it's very relatable. And it's weird to go back and watch this as a gay adult and be like, oh, I had no idea that the stuff she was going through would be stuff that I would also go through. Very well represented. So next scene, we're at the meeting. We're at the gay and lesbian center for the meeting for PFLAG, but not called PFLAG. Ellen's mom comes in alone and says that her father is actually not going to be coming. And she points to this woman in a yellow dress.
Is that one of those dipstick lesbians?
I believe it's called lipstick lesbian. Yes, and I would be a chapstick lesbian.
Which I remember to this day. I have not heard the term lipstick lesbian in years. And I'm like, oh, shit. We maybe got to the point where we realized that, like, lesbians can look like anything. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to classify them into, like,
beautiful or not beautiful.
Basically, yeah.
Good for us, I guess.
Good for lesbians. We can't take credit for that.
Can't we?
We probably will.
I mean, I'm pretty sure some white gay man somewhere is taking credit for the progress that the lesbian representation on TV has made.
He probably has a podcast about it.
Yeah.
When she said dipstick lesbian, it made me think of this guy I knew before he lived in Los Angeles who was, like, almost exclusively friends with lesbians. And I would actually describe most of his friends as dipstick lesbians. Also, good band name.
So in this scene.
Yeah, keep going.
That's all. It's a good scene. Like, all the scenes have been good. I think that her mother plays the right balance of, like, sort of, like, saying hurtful things from the place of being hurt herself, but giving the character a comfortable buffer to grow into quickly without it being unrealistic. Like, her mom makes a lot of progress in this scene and in this episode, but it doesn't necessarily feel, like, rushed.
No, it doesn't. It feels very natural. We keep talking about, like, nothing's contrived. And I guess when you're talking about sitcoms, it's nice when something doesn't feel like it's happening just because it needs to happen.
I mean, I would say that some of the stuff is contrived, but it's earned. Like again, a lot of these lines are sort of boilerplate, but these are also the things you'd want to hit in this episode.
Yeah, I guess you kind of have to. I like the interaction when the mom is standing on her own and she watches the mom and daughter having a fight and the daughter storms out and the mom's sad.
I'm sorry. I just can't change the way I am.
It's tough, isn't it?
I just wish she could respect my feelings.
No, I know how you feel.
Why can't my daughter just accept that I'm gay?
There.
Like, that's a really good joke that I forgot was the joke, but, like, yeah, the mom.
Yeah, the joke being that the upset mother is the actual gay one.
Yeah. The meeting is called to order by Chaz Bono. Before he transitioned, and if somehow that is not the proper way to refer to a trans person making, like, a public appearance before they transition, please let me know. I, like, wanted to double check myself, but it seemed like the right way to say it, right?
I'm not going on the record for this.
Okay. Seeing Chaz on screen, I was like, I know he's written at least one book, but I'm like, he's got to have so many fucking stories. Oh my God. Like, can you imagine like just getting him drunk to the point where like he's just going to tell stories about his like crazy fucked up childhood? Oh, it'd be so fascinating. Probably saw a lot of weird stuff.
Maybe he should have a podcast on table cakes.
Let's go bother him. The other person of note at the meeting is this woman who's like a super proud parent.
Who would like to get started today?
Okay. Oh, I would. I just like to say that I am so proud of my daughter, a lesbian. You know, she and her lover came over for dinner the other night, and it started to rain really hard, and they were going to drive home, and my husband and I just said, no, you're staying here tonight, missies. We'll sleep in the den, you take the master bedroom.
I just want you to know that scares me as much as it scares you.
Which is a thing you see in TV and movies sometimes, like the person who's overdoing how proud they are of their gay child. But I've never seen that person in real life. I don't think
I've also there. Never met this person.
She was played by Lorraine Newman, founding SNL cast member.
Oh.
Who mostly does voiceover work now and does a really good job of it. But weirdly uncredited, and I don't know why. Yeah. So Ellen keeps making jokes, and the mom is uncomfortable about this. And again, I think this is a very natural way for – this is how a comedian would react in this situation is – this thing that was stressful has happened, and you're going to take the steam out of it by making jokes. And it makes the mom very uncomfortable because she's like, I don't think this is something you should be making jokes about. I don't get her reaction. I recognize that reaction as something a parent would have.
I mean, it's not just comedians, but I think a lot of gay men and women do make a lot of jokes about our experience, only to like sort of declaw them. Like, if you can laugh at something, that's less scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a way to show whether genuine or not that we are comfortable with our experience. Like, if people see me joking about coming out or being gay, they are less likely to think that I'm terrified about it.
Or you're, like, very serious about this. And, right. My coming out journey is an epic and spiritual
one. Right. You're giving permission. You're giving people permission to engage with it however they want. And if they want to dismiss it slightly, or if they want to joke about it, although be careful about what fucking jokes you make. But you know, I think it's a sort of common coping mechanism.
I agree. Probably one of the better ones, to be honest. It doesn't really work with the mom. She gives a very halting speech about how she's confused and hurt and just doesn't know what to make of it.
Do you have anything that you'd like to say?
Well, I'd like to say that my daughter is a gay and that I'm very proud of her.
And we're proud of you.
No, wait, no. No, that's what I'd like to say, but I can't because I really don't feel that way, you see. I really feel that this is all my fault.
Lois, it is not your fault. This is who she is.
But you're on a roll. Get it all out. Well, sweetheart, I worry about you. I mean, life is going to be so hard for you now.
Lois, it's harder to live a lie than it is to live your life openly and honestly. But keep going.
Okay. Well, I'm so confused, you know. What do two women do in bed together?
Okay, that's enough time. That's all right. We don't need to hog the floor. Who else wants to talk?
Do heterosexual, like, elderly know actually how gay sex works?
I don't think so. I think they understand that for gay men it involves butts.
Right. And do you think they would be surprised? It's like, well, it doesn't always necessarily. They'd be like, wait, what?
I think they'd be very surprised.
I don't want to do this because it'd be terrible, but I'd be interested if someone could just do like the, you know, those.
If you have a podcast that's just asking older straight people what they think of gay sex, I would listen to that.
It would be like those videos where kids are given a piece of technology from before they were born and they just try to make sense of it. But it would literally just be old people and be like, walk me through how you think it works.
Or make them watch gay porn.
No, I don't want to. It needs to be people that have never actually seen it happen because I.
But then afterwards, show them gay porn.
I think it's sort of like this, but not really. Ellen's mom says she misses the old Ellen, and everything Ellen says is spot on.
You know, I'm looking at you right now, and I really feel like I don't even know you anymore. I miss the old Ellen.
Which Ellen is that? The Ellen that used to keep her feelings bottled up? The Ellen that used to lie to herself and everybody else? The Ellen that could have spent the rest of her life alone?
Yep, that's the one.
Like, very realistic. That really is how a lot of parents want their children to act. So then there's this asshole dad who is played by an actor named Dayton Calley, who has had recurring roles on Fear the Walking Dead, Sons of Anarchy, and Deadwood. I'm like, yep, checks out. Totally checks out. He just plays a loud jerk really, really well. And he stands up and says, you're right. You don't have to accept this. Like, this is sick. And this, like, clicks her mom mode on. And she immediately goes into saying that she loves her daughter and she defends her daughter. And it's very sweet. And then
in the background is Ellen's father, who had just walked in, also witnessed the scene, then goes into dad mode.
Okay, that's it. I'm out of here. The only reason I came here tonight was because I promised your mother I would. And you. I mean, why should your mother accept this? It's wrong. It's sick. And you're sick.
Oh, wait, now don't you talk to my daughter that way. She is not sick. And sure, I'm not happy about this, but I love her, and I don't want to lose her.
You tell him, Lois. She's here. She's queer. Get used to it. I read that on a bumper sticker.
Whenever I hear that slogan, it makes me think of that Simpsons episode. They're protesting.
Itching Scratchy Land.
No, they're protesting the bears. Remember, like, the bear, like, breaks into.
Yes.
Yeah. So they say that the government's not doing enough to protect them from bears. So all the adults go to City Hall to protest and they say,
we're here. We're queer. We don't want any more bears.
We're here. We're queer. We don't want any more bears.
Hey, Homer, that's a pretty catchy chant. Where'd you learn it?
Oh, I heard it at the mustache parade they have every year.
It's a weird joke, actually, that as a kid I was very confused by, because I knew what queer meant, but I'm like, I'm not sure how this makes sense. And I'm like, is that, like, I don't, like, that's just a really weird gay joke, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But whenever I hear we're here, we're anything, it makes my primary go-to is now The Simpsons, because my brain is broken.
Broken.
Yeah. So at the end, they're a family again, and mom and dad are figuring stuff out. End credits.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the closing credit joke.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's really all it is the mom coming over to Ellen after the meeting is finished.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
That over there, she's a doctor. And she's like, not going to happen, mom.
But she's a doctor. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there, you know, hindsight and all, I wonder if there would be mileage to get, or if it would have been realistic to have one parent. Like, I understand the dad, but I also would have accepted if, like, he was sort of, like, super intrigued by it and more accepting of it than the mom. Could the show have been just as dramatic and meaningful if it was just the mom who was struggling with it?
Like, if the roles were flipped?
Well, I mean, because, like, but in this version, both are sort of not really accepting of it. Like, the mom is a little more open to it, but is there something to having the dad just be kind of okay with it because he doesn't have the same investment in Ellen's romantic life that the mother has had over these many seasons?
That's true. That would have at least made for some, at least one really good scene between those two actors.
Right.
Like, if they get to talk about their difference of opinion on this, because we won't really see them disagree at any point.
No. And it's nice moment when the dad comes in at the end, but we don't actually see, I don't know.
It just ends because, like, he's here and we're assuming that everything's been sorted out, but we never see that really happen.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen a scene between the two parents where one is accepting and one is not.
I would just like to have seen more scenes of these two actors because I like them so much.
Right.
And they have such good, like in my mind, they are actually a couple, even though I've seen them in other things. And I know they're not really married, but yeah.
And they never will be.
Because he's passed away.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so glad we picked this episode to start off this season, because I was hesitant. I was pleasantly surprised. I think this episode holds up very well. And I am happy to point people's attention towards an episode that came out after the coming out episode. It's like, it's not like the show just went off a cliff and nosedived. This is a very strong episode of TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tight.
Mm-hmm. I wish Ellen were streaming somewhere. It's not that I can find.
That's strange.
It is strange. At least you think that fucking logo, logo's weird. You think that like somewhere that has that audience would be interested in it. But I know for a fact this was syndicated some places because in syndication, they redid the opening credits. So it says Ellen rather than These Friends of Mine. But I literally never remember it syndicated anywhere. I guess maybe the value dropped off when like the last season like proved to be so unsuccessful, but.
But you would think that one of America's leading personalities and highest earning entertainers,
mm-hmm.
that someone would be like, all these moms who watch her talk show
mm-hmm.
may have a desire to stream her sitcom.
Yeah, you'd think so, but couldn't find it. Very strange. Glenn, do you have any final thoughts on Ellen? The person in the show?
I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about another episode eventually, so I don't have any final thoughts.
I mean,
I like her as a comedian. I like her nervous energy. There, I said it.
I like her. I like the nervous energy more when she's doing stand-up than on the show, because when stand-up, she's on stage alone, and it's clear that she's doing a performance. When I see her around other people, I sympathize with the other people. Would be like, this woman would be very annoying to sit next to. Like, you'd just be like, please. Do you remember the one she's on a jury? There's yes. one where she's on a jury and she's so irritating the entire episode and it made me physically uncomfortable. And she's not always...
Well, I don't know how you stand being friends with me.
You're not annoying. You're nervous. You have a weird nervous energy. I'm not saying you're not going to have a weird nervous energy. Even creepy sometimes, but not annoying.
Okay.
That's the difference, I think. Yeah.
Drew, do you have final thoughts on Ellen?
The person?
No.
Please, if like you maybe have written this off, if you two maybe just don't really think about Ellen all that often, because kind of for me, the most important thing she is in my life now is Portia de Rossi's wife, because I don't watch her show. I don't like, I kind of, the only way I ever experienced Ellen DeGeneres is through Portia de Rossi. Like if Portia de Rossi went somewhere and be like, oh, look, and Ellen's there too. Good for her.
I think you should watch her accepting the Medal of Freedom from Obama.
I've seen it.
I think you should watch it again.
Okay. I'm happy she got it. I just don't want to necessarily work for her, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, she's not asking.
She's not asking. Glenn, if people want to, if Ellen wants to reach out on Twitter and offer you a job, where should she direct it to?
I Write Wrongs. That is with a W, I am told. Yeah. And then on Instagram at Bros Courts.
And I'm on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. I'm also on Instagram at KidIcarus222. This podcast is on Twitter at GayestEpisode. You can listen to all previous episodes at GayestEpisodeEver.com. You can also listen to the show literally anywhere you'd normally find a podcast, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, probably other places. Please give us a rate and review on the podcast platform of your choice. Because you've listened to another podcast, you know why that's helpful. We don't have to explain it to you. Our logo was designed by Rob Wilson. You can see more of his awesome artwork at robwilsonwork.com. And this is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcast network. And you can learn about some of the other shows we have going on at tablecakes.com. As we will never let you forget, we also have a Patreon. You can give us money there. The money will eventually unlock some really cool bonus features, including an entire bonus podcast, which we're kind of a lot closer to having to do than we were when we started this last season. So
that's, now we actually know what it is.
I know, it's going to be really fun. Maybe we'll tell you on Patreon, but you have to give at least the base level of money. So if you want to know, so patreon.com/gayestepisodeever link is in the show notes. What else? You asked me something before.
Oh, I said, Drew, what can we look forward to in season 3?
Oh, all kinds of stuff.
Like the nanny.
Episode TBD, which I have it down to 3 different episodes we're trying to decide. Also, among other shows that we are going to talk about this before the end of the year are Bewitched, King of the Hill, Designing Women, Caroline in the City.
Finally!
I am really excited to talk about this one. Gimme a Break, also finally, Night Court, and that show called Friends. And also a show I'm not sure some of you may not...
Are you talking about Too Close for Comfort?
No.
Oh, I forgot about that one. Okay, well, we're doing Too Close for Comfort. Is that not on the list?
That wasn't on the list for... Oh. I forgot about that one. We should do that one sooner rather than later. Okay.
Yeah.
And other stuff. It'll be a fun way to end the year, and then we'll jump into even more stuff in the new year.
If we're still here.
I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, me neither.
Glenn, I think that's podcast over.
Bye forever.
Podcast over.
I've been lonely too long. Oh, I can't be so strong. Take a chance for a man. Take my heart. I need you so. There's no time I'll ever go. Sherry, Sherry lady, going through emotion. Love is where you find it. Listen to your heart.
Table Cakes production.